welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast, and you're tuning in after the fifth race of the season. We've just seen the race at Saudi Arabia, and I'm here to talk about it with Samantha Horvath. Sam, how are you doing this weekend?
I'm doing pretty well. The weather's a little bit nicer here in Montreal, which always is a mood booster. And then, of course, it was race weekend, so it was definitely a great weekend. How about yourself?
Well, race weekend is always what we look forward to. I'm on holiday actually at the moment in Curaçao, but I was happy to see another weekend, and I'm glad to be here to talk about it with you. And we're also here with Nacho. Nacho, you were on our previous podcast after the Bahrain race, and it's great to have you back on. It's great to also have you replay and get back at Sam for the quiz later on.
Yeah, ready for the comeback, for the second chance. But yeah, thank you for inviting me again. Pleasure again to be here in this podcast, and yeah, ready to get started.
I am also ready to get started, and I was actually thinking of doing something unusual for this podcast. What do you guys think about if we turn things around slightly? We haven't talked about this beforehand, but maybe we go first to some scores, and by doing so, we might as well go over the quiz and at that time talk about the race of each individual driver a little bit and see if this different order is... it's just an experimental way of doing the podcast. I don't know what you guys feel about that.
I'm all for it. I'm good for change.
It's good, yeah.
All right.
I think so, Nacho doesn't mind, because we can get started right into the scores and hopefully let the battle begin.
If I lose again, maybe I quit again.
No.
Well, it's actually interesting.
I don't talk anymore if I lose.
It is interesting if we look at our predictions, because we all predicted the same race winner, which didn't end up being the race winner. But let's get into forecast scores a little bit. And we had 1,510 people playing the game. And Sam, what do you think that we had as an average score?
That's a very good question, because I want to believe that the three of us are not the only ones that chose Norris at the top of the podium. So I'm going to say average score 38.
Average score 38. I'm saying 47.
All right, we had a pretty high average score, I felt, after this weekend. So we had an average score of 47.9. And that brings us to my next question, which I think is an even more interesting one. How many people predicted a correct podium, which of course was, and this is what we will talk about for the rest of the podcast, of course, but we had a podium of Piastri, Verstappen and Leclerc. And I'm interested to hear what you guys think out of 1,510 people who went with a podium in that order.
I don't think it was going to be a lot. I mean, those that did, kudos to you, because I never would have seen that podium coming. But needless to say, I'm going to say three.
Yeah, three. Yeah, it's not the usual podium, right? Like, having Leclerc there and Norris did a good job in the first practice. I'm saying around 30, like maybe a little bit more.
All right, you move it up with factor 10. Well, actually, it was quite a few people, but it was a bit more than Sam was saying, but fewer than what you went for. So it was 10 people that had a podium of Piastri, Verstappen and Leclerc. So that means, Sam, you get close to the right answer. It means you will be able to start the quiz a little bit later on, which we will do a little bit earlier than this time, but not before we look at our podium of this weekend. So let's have a look at our third place for this weekend, which was actually won by, and I haven't mentioned it, but Savannah's not with us again. The time zones didn't work out to have Savannah on the podcast, but her sister made it to the third spot on the podium this weekend, scoring 92 points.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. I wish Savannah was the time zones. It's always a challenge, of course, as we all know as F1 fans. So It would have been quite an interesting one to have her on when it came to that, because her sister's been doing very well when it comes to the scores so far this season.
Yeah, I think she's consistently outscoring Savannah. But and to be honest, I would have thought that the score of 92 would have gotten you the win in most weekends, in most non-sprint weekends. It definitely would. But we had two people who scored even more points, and one of them was Wilson de la Guillo from Bolivia, scoring 93.5 points. And I think that's actually the first Bolivian that we ever had on the podium in forecast.
That's awesome. And last weekend, we had the first Malaysian player on the podium. So it looks like we're definitely, for a few here, we're hitting some firsts. So that's really cool.
Yeah, some landmarks there indeed. And that brings us, of course, to first place, a player from Serbia and scoring 95.5 points, Branko Sikimic. And I think scoring 95.5 points deserves me going through his actual prediction and checking where he scored those points, which is basically by getting almost everybody right. So he went with a prediction of Piastri on P1, Verstappen on P2, Leclerc on P3, went with Norris on P4, saw coming that Russell and Antonelli would finish P5 and P6, Hamilton on P7, and from then onward he started to miss out on some points. So actually went with Tsunoda on P8, Hadjar on P9, which did get him 50% of the 1 point that Hadjar scored, and Sainz on P10, so still scored 1 point for that too. So for a total maximum amount of points that you can score in a non-sprint weekend, which is 101 points, scoring 95.5 is quite an accomplishment, I would say.
Wow, that's incredible.
And if I'm not mistaken, we talked about it last podcast, but we said what we would do is that we would play the national anthem of the winner in forecast. So I think that means we're going to close this podcast with the Serbian national anthem.
Very cool.
That doesn't mean there's nothing to play about for in the quiz. I mean, there's still a lot of honor to be won there, guys. So I don't want to discourage you in any way. We will get to the quiz a little bit later on. Let's first look. Well, we want to look at our scores as well, of course. But I want to look first at the countries and have a look at which countries had the most players. And it's been somewhat consistent over the last few weeks. So let's see if this week we had another predictable outcome with players per country. Sam, I'm giving you the floor. You can tell me what your thoughts are.
I think I'm going to stick with I'm going to stick with what it has been recently, which would be Mexico, in no particular order, Mexico, Spain, and Kenya.
Yes, that is indeed right. So we had 117 players from Kenya, 84 from Spain, and 77 from Mexico. And that's also our podium. Actually, in our top 10, we had a couple of countries switching places. So actually, Argentina moved their way up to P5, overtaking India. And we also had the Netherlands overtaking one spot from the USA and now being on P8. And most gained positions for any country was Japan. They moved up 10 places. They actually only have one player, or had one player this weekend, but he finished in the top 20. So that got him a lot of points. Japan moving up a couple of positions. And we also had a player from a new country, at least a country that had not been represented thus far this season, which was a player from Trinidad and Tobago. So yeah, that's the country overview. And talking about countries, I do want to look at our collaborations, which we have in two specific countries. And let's go to Lebanon first, where we worked together with the DRS lane, and the highest classified Lebanese player this weekend scored a P14 overall, and that's Eli Salim, scoring 78.5 points. So Eli is getting that $10 voucher for the DRS lane in Beirut. And then we go also to the pregame Motorshop merchandise, and we look at the podium, because all the podium finishers get a voucher there as well. And on P1, we have Danica Bombales with 63.5 points. On P2 is John Pilapil. I think he was on the podium recently as well in the pre-game competition. And then we had Kat Lasanalayo. And yeah, that's the podium for the pre-game motor shop for this weekend, and actually in their competition it's pretty tight there at the top, so a very interesting one, and they already hand out some prizes at the mid-season break, at the summer break, so going to be very, very interesting to see who takes those spots and takes those prizes home. And of course, talking about top spots, we also want to see our regular competition for Forecast and see who's doing well and who's now at that famed top spot, even only after five races. So of course there's still a lot that can happen. So let's have a look at the podium that we had after we finished in Bahrain. We had Jordi Schoonemiller from the Netherlands in P3 overall. He scored 48.8 points this weekend. Not too bad, but he does drop a couple of places. So he's on P16 now. We had on P2, we had Jack Woods from Canada. And Jack scored 60.8 points. That means that after this weekend, he's back on P1. So Jack has been moving from P1 to P2, and he's back on P1. So Sam, we have a Canadian
very
again
nice.
At the top.
I love to hear that. So that's awesome.
I knew you would. Cesar Murataya, who was on P1 after last weekend, scored 51.3 points and drops to P2. So Cesar from Mexico, you're now at P2, but not too far away from Jack. You're only 2.1 points behind. So the gap at the top is still very, very small. There's a lot that can change, but it does mean we have a new P3. And Sam, it's a friend of ours. So you take a random guess? Well, it shouldn't be random, actually. Do you have any idea who that person would be?
Oh my goodness. Well, we have I don't know. I honestly don't want to say, because I know Ajit obviously was third last week, but I feel like it wouldn't be him.
No, it's not. No.
You know what, Anton, why don't you just
well one
let us
weekend,
know.
But that doesn't mean he's he's still I think
well, yes,
quite a bit away, but all of us are. So let's not but yeah, it's
yes,
actually it's Nancy. Nancy is on P3 right at this moment.
No way.
So she scored 81.5 points this weekend. Big point haul. So that's P3 for her.
Wow. Congratulations, Nancy. It's so funny because I was thinking of Nancy, and she's been at most recently she was at the Suzuka race, so
that's right.
Looks like it's definitely paying off when it comes to the points, so that's awesome to hear.
Sam, talking about points and paying off, what was your prediction for this weekend? What was your podium?
Well, I think I mentioned it earlier, but it definitely did not pay off. It was Norris, Russell, and Piastri. I'm actually even trying to think back in my brain. Did I actually pick that podium? Yes, I did. It made logical sense at the time. It clearly did not translate in the race, but always expect the unexpected.
You scored 25.5 points, which means that you're pretty much at the back of everything. You're P1467 this weekend.
Oh my goodness, what a complete difference in comparison to last year. I've really decided to bottle the first part of the season, haven't I?
Well, same for me. I mean, we finished both. You finished third last year. I finished 22nd. We'll have a look at where we are in the standings now. Actually, let's have a look where you are. You were P335 after last weekend. You drop. I'm sorry to tell you, Sam, but you dropped so many spots, a couple of hundreds. You're P699 now, so you're in the top 700.
Somehow I feel like, you're not too sorry about it, unless I'm beating you. So
you are beating
me. So where do you stand,
me, so.
Anton?
Yeah, no. Let's first go to Nacho before we talk about my points.
Yes, because, let's hear about that.
I wasn't doing much better than you did, Sam, but Nacho did do a little bit better. Do you remember what podium you went with?
Yeah, I went with Norris as a race winner, and then I had Piastri second, and I had Leclerc in third. So actually, that was a big point over there.
Yeah, that's right. You got Leclerc right, so that got you 15 points. You got a total of 46.3 points, so you finished P840. Not great, but definitely a lot better than both me and Sam.
I'm happy. Just the best one out of the three.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a nice pick too, to choose Leclerc, on the podium.
Right.
I honestly never would have, went with that. However, of course, we'll talk about it later, just how much of a fantastic drive he ended up having. So.
Yeah, I agree. I had Leclerc on P4 myself. I went with Norris, Piastri, Russell, and I scored 34.5 points, placing me P1,307. So also not great.
Yikes.
Actually, Nacho, you moved down from P311 to P340, so not too bad. Myself, I dropped from P675 to P843.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's a tough one to take. Let's move on to high scores. And Sam, what do you think the P1 of this weekend, scoring 95.5 points, where does that slot in the worldwide high scores? Where does that put someone?
Oh, 95 is a pretty high score. So I'm going to say that it has to be in the top three.
It's top four, actually. It brings to P4, of course. There were a lot of high scores in the Chinese weekend because that was a sprint weekend. So there were more points on the board for that weekend. So, yeah, the 95.5 is extremely high in a non-sprint weekend. And, it's gotten Branco to P4 worldwide. And, of course, there's a lot of other high scores that have been set, and you will be able to find all of those in the application. So have a look there, see if you're in one of your continents in one of the high scores, if you're doing well in the game, unlike me and Sam. So that brings us to and this is what I had in mind. So we've gone through a couple of the scores, and I would like to go to the quiz now, but rather than really doing them one by one and having you guess the whole list, I'd like to just, you know, work down each finishing position and talk a little bit about the driver that we are making a guess about. So while making your guess, we talk a little bit about what happened in the weekend, and you can definitely mention parts of whichever part of the weekend, so that can be a highlight from the qualifying or a highlight from the race. And I think it's only fair to start with Piastri, and Sam, it's going to be you that is going to have to go first with guessing how many out of the 1,510 players put Piastri there on P1. But while reasoning about your guess, let's go over Piastri's weekend a little bit, and I think it was quite a interesting one altogether. Of course, you can take the floor from here and talk a little bit about it and spill your thoughts.
All right, we're doing a little bit differently this time, but I like it.
Yeah, we definitely are.
So let me start first with my guess as to how many people I believe chose Piastri. I'm going to go with 675. I think it would have been fairly high. Clearly, he is at this point now leading the World Drivers' Championship. And I think he had an overall really decent weekend. I really liked how, of course, we will dive into the discussion of the penalty that Max incurred, but at the beginning of the race. But I would say that I just like the way that he started the race, the way that he tried to put his elbows out and battle Max in that first turn, which, I mean, it's a track that is extremely unforgiving. I also think that the way he was able to be quite on point in terms of qualifying, I think overall it was a very solid weekend for Piastri. And, you know, what I see in Oscar, and I said this, funny enough, I said this 2 years ago on the podcast. I remember it was 2 years ago because it was at the beginning of his career as a Formula One driver. And I said at that time that I felt like there are some drivers where you just know they have that factor that will make them a world champion. You can see that they just have it. There's a very select few drivers, Formula One drivers, that are world champions. And some just, they have a unique quality to them. And I really do believe that Oscar carries many of those traits. And whether it's this season where he ends up becoming, securing the world title, which would be incredible, and it is still early days to determine who would. I really feel like he's just scratching the surface at this point in terms of his success and his eventual success. It's very bright. So I think that this weekend was a fantastic weekend for him overall. And you know what? It only deepens the competitiveness when it comes to McLaren. And it's really interesting to see that dynamic and watching it unfold. Unfortunately for Lando, maybe a little bit different, but I still think that we'll talk about Lando. I don't even want to go there yet, but and it's a little difficult in this format because I want to, but I think overall Oscar had a fantastic weekend. Once again, I think this is his third race win, and
this year,
not
yeah.
a bad way to.
I think it's
this year.
It's,
yeah,
I think
this
it's
year.
Five in total.
His third
now.
Race win this year.
I think it's the
five
same
in
number.
Total. Five in total.
Same as Norris.
Yeah.
Who you don't want to talk
That's
about
true.
Yet, which I do understand. I wanted to ask you, Nacho, what do you think about the race that Piastri had? Because, of course, Sam already touched upon the topic there of what happened on lap one, turn one. But after what happened there, did Piastri have an easy race, or was it still an impressive one? What do you think?
I think the crucial moment for Piastri that I realized he could win the race was when he overtook Hamilton in before turn 22. I think that was brave. I think that was, as Sam said, it's like he's a unique driver. He's one of the drivers that you know he can be. He's a world champion manner. And once I saw that movement, how brave he was going to the inside instead of waiting for the DRS zone, right?
Right.
So he just took that and he just went for it. That shows how intelligent he is, how brave, how smart in that scenario, and how confident overall in track he is. So that shows that he's up to it, and he deserved the win like no one else. We saw Verstappen in qualifying that he took the pole position, because I believe Max Verstappen is from another planet right now. He's driving extra, like we will talk about it later. But Piastri gave the 100%. He gave everything on track, and you can see the result. Another win, leading the world championship, and he's pretty confident for the next races as well.
Definitely. And how many people do you think, because it's an interesting one, I think we touched upon it slightly in our previous podcast as well, after the Piastri win, it was going to be interesting to see how many people would go with a Norris win and a Piastri win. And I think we should actually talk about that as well, and see the division of people in forecast between Piastri predictions and Norris predictions on P1. But before that, Sam went with 675, Nacho. How many people do you think had Piastri as their winner in their forecast?
I think everybody was waiting for a Norris comeback, right? Like, after the last Grand Prix, everybody was like, oh, maybe Norris will step up and do something. I was waiting for Norris to win, so I believe less people voted for Piastri. I'm saying 333. I'm staying with the 33s. Sorry.
It's an interesting reasoning, and it's exactly where I somewhat want to go after this. Actually, this first point is a point for Sam, because actually, Sam, you were pretty damn close. It was 614 people that went with the Piastri win. So
wow.
So very good guess there with the 675. And then I guess the next question, which could be somewhat of a bonus question, but I'll ask it now anyway. How many people do you then think, let's go up or under. Do you think more people went with because 675 is already a very decent number of people, of course. Do you think there would be more people that went with a Norris win, or do you think there would be less?
It's a very good question. I think that I'm going to say that more people went with Norris, but I think that after this weekend, that's going to change.
Yeah, I agree. I think this weekend made a statement for Piastri, showing what he's capable of.
yeah, I can't look in the future yet and see what's going to happen for Miami, but we can look at the amount of P1 predictions for Norris, and it was 749. So that was still about 130 more predictions for Norris on P1 than there were for Piastri on P1. That brings us to Verstappen, and I think that means we do need to talk a little bit about what happened there at turn one, lap one. So the predictions first for Nacho, so I'm going to give you the floor, and you can describe a little bit what happened there at the beginning of the race today.
You want my predictions first?
Either way, you can set it up the way you would like.
Okay, well, my prediction for Verstappen in P2, I thought Red Bull was going to struggle more here, but you know how Max is. So I'm saying 230 for Max in P2. 230 people. And then, yeah, of course, the lap one. It reminded me of, I don't know, I had so many flashbacks of Saudi Arabia 2021. I don't know about you guys, but I had those memories of Hamilton, Verstappen, lap one, turn one, fighting. Yeah. Then I jump the, I don't hit the, you know, the apex. I just go around the outside and just wait for the FIA to make a decision.
Yeah, exactly. Because over there it was Verstappen that was on the inside, right? He was on the other. It was exactly opposite between him and Hamilton as it was now with Piastri and him. It was a very similar situation indeed.
Yeah, those are very similar situations that Verstappen. You know how he is when he's inside. He doesn't leave any room, and then he was waiting in 2021, waiting for Hamilton to give the position back, and now he's like, oh, I don't think I need to give the position back because he, you know, he kicked me out of track. So, you know, and that was, you know, a good point of view there for Max. Obviously, no, there's no blame on themselves for drivers. They just blame on the others. And I think Piastri did a really good job there, going full, like sending it all the way. And then Verstappen did what he needed to do. He saw the position was lost, and he just left the throttle and just full. He just missed the apex and waited for the FIA to do a statement there. I don't think the 5 seconds were deserved. You know, like I think should be to give the position back while the safety car was on. But you know how the FIA works. I kind of disagree in that penalty.
Yeah, I think these days the FIA doesn't. I mean, it's the teams that need to decide to give a position back, and if they don't, the FIA just give penalties rather than telling them to give positions back like they used to do back in the day, for example, which you were mentioning in 2021. But what the final document said after the race is that, you know, because actually Lawson later on got a 10-second penalty for overtaking outside of track limits, and what the document said regarding Verstappen was that it you know the normal penalty would be 10 seconds, but there were some circumstances which led them to only give 5 seconds, mainly it being first lap right after the start, first turn, which are some mitigating circumstances, which, you know, you can always debate a little bit. You know, sometimes they don't give penalties at all for what happens on the first turn after the start, and now they do, but with mitigating circumstances. For me, it's also sometimes a little bit vague of what happens when, and personally I was slightly I was surprised actually that Verstappen didn't stay out a little bit longer. Of course, with hindsight it's very easy to talk about these things, but we saw that Leclerc was able to drive almost 8 laps more than Verstappen did on that medium tire, and I really thought that when Piastri pitted, and Verstappen really, pulled up his pace, and I thought he was going to do that for a couple of more laps in order to offset that 5-second penalty, but in the end he didn't, and of course all of it led to Verstappen coming out behind Piastri after the pits, and after they both had pitted. And Sam, I think what was your reading on what happened on the first lap and after the start, and of course also what do you think, how many people had Verstappen on P2? These things now go hand in hand.
All right. Well, I think first of all, when it comes to the penalty, it's a tough one, because I think you have several factors. You have several things that could be or couldn't be, right? Number one being what we've already mentioned here is that sometimes the stewards, the FIA does give a little break when it comes to the first lap or the first turn, but in this case they didn't. You could also argue the fact that it was a situation where sometimes there's 10 seconds, like you had explained there, Anton, in this case, five, or so, in other cases, it's to give the position back. We also saw a safety car. And then you look at, it was a very close call, I think, nonetheless. And what was clear from, at least from what I could see looking at the videos, is that Max was extremely late on the braking going into turn one, which I think also was a factor to him going wide. Now, whether or not the penalty was deserved or not, I don't know. I think that, to be quite frank with you, it's a difficult one. No matter what, it changed the entire outcome of the race. But I don't think that it completely changed it, because I agree with you as well. When it comes to the pit stop, I was also a little bit surprised that they brought him in when they did, because I felt like if there was going to be any area, I mean, Oscar won by, I believe it was close to 2.8 seconds ahead of Max. So really that 2.8 seconds, they could have possibly tried to just extend things a little bit more before they pitted him so early, so that maybe they could have a little bit more of an upper hand going into the final stretch of the lap. So I was, from a strategical point of view, I thought that maybe they could have made up a little bit of ground there. However, that wasn't what happened. What I also felt was interesting was after the race, it was clear that Max wasn't happy with the result. That was definitely something. What was also interesting, though, that I took out of it was he said many times over that he wasn't going to explain, he wasn't going to give any opinion on anything because he didn't want to get fined. So I think that regardless, we're in a really interesting time period, because ordinarily, I mean, there's so many interviews these guys have after a race, and so everybody vocalizes how they feel. There's no shortage of that typically when you see in F1, whether it's team principals, drivers, or the like. But in this case, he doesn't even want to explain his side because he feels like he can't. And then you also have a situation where, it's just, to me, ultimately, it's a challenge. It's frustrating when there's no clear defined line when it comes to penalties given, regardless from the FIA and the decisions that they make. And I think that the consistency is always the thing that is the most frustrating. Whether or not the penalty was deserved or not, I think is up in the air. But ultimately, I think more of the lack of consistency and really not being able to walk away from a decision saying, yeah, you know what, that makes sense, because this has been implemented time and time again.
Also one thing is that, and I don't know if the FIA actually does have, I suppose they have all the camera angles, right, that exist, but what I really miss is a good camera angle from up top where you can really see, you know, the track from, let's say, helicopter view, and see, you know, who is where at which point in time, because we're really looking at camera angles out of the cockpit where you see the car but you don't see the car besides it, and it's just very difficult to judge. So we're all really talking, at least I haven't really seen these camera angles, maybe I haven't watched everything that happened afterwards, but I think it's also, that leaves a lot of room for discussion, right? And I don't want to take away anything from the, Nacho already mentioned it, and it was, you know, the qualifying performance of Max on Saturday was just, it was sublime. I mean, there's really, we can say a lot of things about it, but I think we can all agree that it was really one of his best performances on a Saturday. But then what happens on the Sunday, I also find, I understand that after the race, everybody is, you know, everybody's very emotional and has emotion. So perhaps it's better not to say anything than to say something. But then again, I also feel that, you know, Piastri actually drove there the way that Verstappen has done throughout his whole career in the same style, like just, you know, going for that corner. And you know, you even see Verstappen do it himself. Like I think Sam, you were mentioning it, he doesn't break he breaks very late so that he is in front, or that he's trying to be in front at the apex, but that way he's never going to make the corner. Now you could say the same thing about Norris, that he's pushing him off, but I mean, yeah, this is exactly the same as what Verstappen has been doing for years. So I would have liked to see that he actually just, you know, doesn't perhaps is a little bit more accepting of what happened than that he really was. But yeah, I guess you know, it also depends a little bit on who you like as a driver and what type of racing style you like to watch, whether you're a fan of this or not. But I think you gave a pretty good description of, you know, the neutral fan perhaps probably being right in the middle of the of all the opinions there. But you want to say something?
I just think it's difficult. No, I think ultimately it's just it's a difficult place to be when it's not clear, right? I mean, it's like you said, like we don't have all the, although the FIA said that they made their decision based on, you know, multiple camera angles and whatnot. I mean, it's to me, if things were consistent in terms of decisions, then I don't think we'd be sitting here going, well, you know, what if and what not. And that to me is what I take out of something like this. And you know, just further to your point, when it comes to Piastri, I believe one of the main reasons why I said earlier that I believe that he has the ability, he has that unique skill. A really great example of it is that is the beginning of the race in turn one. And why I say that is because you've seen time and time again, amazing drivers go to battle Max, and they are usually the ones that let him go because of his driving style, because they know that he's not willing to compromise. True. On the track. And the thing about Piastri is that he was willing in that to be able, there wasn't you could tell that through his driving there wasn't a single moment of I'm going to let go. He was confident and he went straight and followed through. And that's a rarity to see with other drivers like actually trying to battle Max and more importantly at the very beginning. So I felt like that spoke volumes to me in terms of him as a driver, and the fact that he also carries himself the way that he does with a level-headedness and the intelligence that Nacho had also mentioned too of him on the track. It's like the perfect combination, and we are only seeing his third season, so it's really exciting to actually watch the development and see just how talented he is, how he has some of those qualities and traits that you see maybe a handful in some drivers. He kind of almost has that whole package. But I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here when it comes to that, because there's still a lot of racing to be left for the season. So
Nacho went also with 230 on Verstappen.
I was just gonna
I want to know what you're going with.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with just above you, Nacho. I'm gonna say 250.
Nice. That means you both have a point on the board now. It was 204, so that means Nacho slightly closer with 230. Means you were only 26 away from the right answer. So that one goes to you, which means we go to Leclerc. And Sam, that one's for you first. And what do you think about the race of Leclerc? Because in the end, looking at his tire strategies, it's quite interesting that he did 29 laps on the medium tire and only 21 laps on the hard tire. Wouldn't you expect it to be the other way around?
It's a good question. Yeah, but at the same time, you know what? I thought that he had a fantastic drive. I really was surprised to see him on the podium. I think ultimately Ferrari's strategy and Leclerc himself, they extracted the most that they absolutely could out of the car and probably achieved the best result you could have anticipated. So with that being said, I'm going to go with, because I don't think a lot of people believed in that. And Natro, however, was one of them, though, that did.
Exactly.
I'm going to say, I'm going to go with 87.
All right. I'm writing down 86 plus Nacho, 87. All right, Nacho, yourself, what do you think? How many people went with that besides you?
I think for Leclerc, the reason why I chose Leclerc in third position was that I thought Ferrari was going to do better in Saudi Arabia. They always been, you know, really, really fast in that track. They won in 2022, they got second and third with Leclerc and Sainz, if I'm not wrong. And then they did a couple of first rows in 2023. They had a good performance as well. So I was, you know, I was thinking that Ferrari was gonna do like a great score, like points here. They're gonna score a lot of points, but somehow they didn't again. But I thought Leclerc, like, he's pretty confident in that circuit. He always been good here, and I thought he was gonna do like a great job, and indeed he did. And it was impressive, the medium stint that he did with those medium tires until lap 29, as we said, and that was quite a lot of laps in those medium tires, with good tire management, with good pace as well, good racecraft. And then at the end, with the hard tires, he took advantage and he overtook Russell over there. So that was a great drive from Leclerc. And you said 87. I'm saying, I would say nearly like 190, 180, I would say. I think more people voted for Ferrari. I think they are waiting for Ferrari, you know, to rise again. So
yeah, and it is consistent, because I think he was third as well last year, Leclerc, at Saudi. 180 or 190, it doesn't matter which one I write down, you do get the point, because it was actually, and it surprises me a little bit, because I would have thought that I would have thought that most people would have gone, I'm thinking most people went with McLaren's on the 1-2 positions, and then I guess faith in Ferrari is still quite high. There was 267 people that went with Leclerc, so on P3, I mean. So that means another point for you, Nacho. It's one against two, and it means we get to talk a little bit about the race of Lando Norris, which is another interesting one. Of course, starting with a slightly alternative strategy, starting on the hard tire, just as a couple of other drivers like Hadjar and Hülkenberg. But Norris actually made it work quite a bit. And I think I don't know which broadcast you guys were listening to, but I was hearing on Sky Sports that Zak Brown was saying to Martin Brundle that he thought that Lando Norris had good chances to still get on the podium. And he got pretty close. He also, just like you said, Nacho, Leclerc overtaking Russell, Norris also managed to overtake Russell, but just not to get close enough to Leclerc. I think in the end it finished, he was just north of a second behind Leclerc, and not really being able to challenge to really get onto a podium, but still taking the fact that he started on P10, finishing on P4, relatively decent. But of course he threw a lot of it away already on the Saturday. So what do you think of the race weekend of Lando Norris as a whole?
As a whole, I would say maybe 4 out of 10, and I'm being very optimistic. I think, yeah, you can allow like some mistakes, but that is the beginning of the season. You should make a statement, as your teammate is saying. Your teammate is doing, Piastri is doing a big statement over there. Verstappen is outperforming his Red Bull. Norris needs to step up. I talked about it in the last podcast, saying that Norris needs to make a statement, like put, you know, say that he's there, that he's capable of winning titles. And right now he's struggling. He's, I don't know, he's hesitating. It's not a rookie mistake, because I understand it's like a Q3 lap that he's going full like he's sending everything, and that can happen, of course. But yeah, that's been a light scheme on starting Q3 in P10, and then, you know, he compromises his strategy to start with a hard compound, need to overtake a lot of drivers. We saw him, I think he did a mistake overtaking Hamilton
right
before the DRS zone. That cost him a couple of laps that maybe if he overtakes and he reads more that situation earlier and better, he overtakes Hamilton in a better situation, he doesn't lose time, and maybe he could have overtook Leclerc later on. We will never know, but those are things that make people think that Norris is not ready yet to win a championship. I don't see Norris fighting face to face with Max as Piastri did, for instance, in lap one. I don't see Norris there yet. So it was like, for me, yeah, good overcome back, like good way to finish P4. He saved everything, a little bit of points there, but still he lost more than he won, and it was a little bit, you know, underperforming for him.
This reminded me actually a little bit of the fighting that Leclerc and Verstappen did in Bahrain, I think in 2023, if I'm saying that right, or is it 2022, where
2022,
you know, yeah, where they were using the different DRS zones. And of course it was similar mm-hmm. here in Saudi, that you had, like, you know, you had the DRS zone at the start finish straight, but you had two DRS zones before that, and using those smartly. If you did it well, you lined up during those first two DRS zones and made sure that you overtook on the third. And Norris, of course, I understand it happens. I mean, you learn while racing, and Hamilton is you know, not the easiest one to come up against. So that it happens is one thing. That happens twice, yeah, that didn't look too good on Norris's part. And I agree. I think I would probably rate his weekend even slightly lower than that. I mean, it's also, you know, he loses the first position in the championship now to his teammate, which also gives an interesting vibe now to the inter-team dynamics. But before I ask Sam what she thinks about all of this, I want to know from you, Nacho, how many people do you think went with Norris on P4?
On P4, I would say less than we've been talking. I would say from before, I'm saying 11.
All right. Well, Sam, take it away.
I think I'm going to say that it's clear, at least as a viewer, that Lando may be struggling with confidence, and it's translating onto the track. I think that has been one of the consistent issues that he's had when he's under pressure. We saw it last year. If you recall that last year, one of the challenges that he had was usually his race starts. He would struggle in his race starts and he'd make mistakes. And the mistakes all usually take place when he's under pressure. If you remember, even in the race, I believe it was in, I want to say Russia, but the one where he almost had the podium win, and he made the choice to stay out when it was raining and cost him the podium.
Yeah, that was Russia even 2020.
That was Russia.
I don't recall which year it was actually, but
I want to say maybe Russia. 2021. But he had the potential to win his first race, and he panicked. And it was very clear over the radio. He also decided to go against his team from a strategical standpoint when it came to tires. And so, I mean, if there's one thing we can say, that these decisions that he's made at times, or just there seems to be, unfortunately for him, he struggles sometimes when he's under pressure. And I think that in contrast to his teammate, Piastri, you can see that in many respects he seems to be pretty cool and level-headed under pressure. So I think that's where we're seeing the difference in terms of performance, because the car is there, the team has definitely leveled up in many respects. But when it comes to being in a situation, he had Q1, he had Q2, he was doing fine, and then all of a sudden he gets to Q3 in qualifying, and he unfortunately bottled it there. So it's something that he had to pay a price for when it came to the race. However, I would say that from a positive standpoint, I think that he also didn't have a bad race. He was in a position where, yeah, he started in 10th, but the strategy was good to put him on hards. I think that he really did do the best that he could with what he had. He had a nice little situation with Hamilton for a while, battling him, and eventually overtook him. And then I think that there was a period of time where he was able to try to take as much as he could out of the hards before pitting. So, I mean, he had a possibility to get on the podium, but even to get on the podium from 10th would have been a stretch regardless. So finishing in 4th, I think, was probably the best result he could have obtained with what he had. Would I give him, I don't know if I give him as low of a rating as the two of you. I still wouldn't give him a great rating, but I would think that when it came to the race, he put together what he could with what he had. I think it really his weekend came down to the qualifying and what was made out of that. And again, I think that it's attributed likely to his confidence and the pressure and just not being able to handle it as well as his teammate. Now we go farther into the season. As we get deeper into the season, it's really, at the end of the day, I think that's what's going to define where he stands and his results. And at this point, being in a position where everybody is going to be talking about it, and you can clearly see that the way that he reacts, he's struggling with that. It's going to come down to whether or not he can just mentally put it aside and just take the skill and put that on the track. So it will be interesting as we get deeper into the season. But with that being said, what would I like to pick Lando in terms of numbers? How many people chose him? I'm gonna go with 62.
All right, that's a pretty good guess, actually. Gotta say, it was 76. So you're pretty close there. It means that you score another point. It means it's 2-2. It means we go to the two Mercedeses, and first there was George Russell, who, of course, you know, he had a good Saturday, I would say, Mr. Saturday, but in the end finished 5th. And Sam, it's actually up to you to first have a little chat about George Russell and tell us what you think. How many people went with George Russell in P5?
I'm gonna give the pick first. I'm gonna go with 180. But I also think that when it comes to Russell, look, I think it was actually more so a quiet drive on Russell's end. But what I will say, and I'll be brief in this, is just simply the fact that I really think that he has, so far in these first 5 races, I mean, he's really having a fantastic start to the season, considering the circumstances, right? Considering the fact that Mercedes isn't the fastest car on the grid, considering the fact that there's a lot of factors involved they're not at the caliber that we would ordinarily see them at. And I really think that he is just pushing it as much as possible, and he's had a really fantastic run so far. So P4, I actually had him on the podium this weekend, so I was taking in the previous 4 races into account with that decision. And also, if you guys remember, I think it was last year, he was in the lead for the Grand Prix, and he actually ended up hitting the wall. If you guys remember that, it was, he locked up on the brakes. It was towards the very end of the race. And I believe it was last year. So I felt like maybe he had an opportunity to redeem himself this year, especially given, like I said, his the last 4 races, but that clearly did not happen. Still P4, I think, is a decent result for Mercedes altogether.
Right. And we go to, well, actually, we first go to Nacho. I wanted to go already to Antonelli in P6, but not before we hear from Nacho. How many people do you think had Russell on P5?
I think most of people, I think they voted for Russell either P3 or P4. they maybe people didn't think that Leclerc was gonna jump there or Verstappen was gonna make another impressive performance again. I'm saying like maybe a little bit 240 people. Yeah.
All right.
Voted for Russell there. I think it's a good race for him, despite that maybe he lost his position with Leclerc. I think Norris, Piastri and Verstappen were faster than him the whole week. The only thing we can say to Russell is that he lost the position with Leclerc. That was his best position that he could have finished was P4 maybe. But overall, first of the Mercedes drivers, just ahead of Antonelli, really great qualifying again. We were seeing a great George Russell during Saturdays, so that shows that he's pretty confident with the car. He shows everything, he gives everything there, and he's always there. He's quiet. He's doing the hard work in a silence situation, silence mode, and he's always there on top. He's very consistent, Mr. Consistency again. Now finishing P5, so that was a really decent race for him, despite that he lost the position with Leclerc.
No, I agree with both of your analysis. He's been very consistent thus far this first five races of the season. So I think now people are talking about the championship fight between the three drivers, obviously there at the top, Piastri, Norris and Verstappen, but Russell is very steadily there at fourth place and is about to have a great season. And I think if that Mercedes would be would be of the caliber of McLaren, and I think he would make it very difficult for the others there at the top. But but reviewing a little bit your picks there and looking at the actual answer, there were 452 people that went with Russell on P5. So that means Nacho going with the higher number there is getting the point, meaning it's 3-2, which means we move to the other Mercedes driver, obviously Kimi Antonelli, finishing on P6, qualifying P5, if I'm not wrong, on the Saturday. So I think talking about consistency for a young driver of his age, I think it's also it's fair to say that it was a very good weekend for him too, relatively speaking. And Nacho, I think the floor is first yours. And how many people do you think went with Antonelli on P6?
Well, it's impressive that 400 people went for Russell in P4. Then for P6, Antonelli, I think more people voted for him in that position. I'm saying maybe 560, I'm saying, for Kimi Antonelli. I think that's a decent position for him. Nothing more to ask and to, you know, to demand for him. I think P6 is a really good job behind his teammate, putting the car again on points in front of the second Red Bull driver that's been struggling, Tsunoda and Lawson, but again, he's there, he's on points, without risks, without any accidents, incidents, just very smooth again for a rookie driver, and that's very, very precise for him, another race weekend.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with both of you guys here when it comes to Kimi. I think that as a rookie driver, he's being very consistent. I think it's a very decent result for him considering the circumstances. And overall, I mean, for all the rookie drivers this weekend, I was nervous for all of them, because to me personally, I think this track is the one that gives me the most nerves. It is the fastest street track on the calendar. It is. There is absolutely, it is uncompromising, or unforgiving, I should say. There's zero room for error, like whatsoever. So as a rookie, I mean, I was very nervous for these guys. So the fact that Kimi pulled it out again with a pretty solid result, I think that it's a very satisfying result for him altogether. With that being said, I think numbers wise, I'm going to go with 202 people, I think, that would have chosen Kimi to finish there.
Yeah, you know, I think that you're right. Actually, I get the very same feeling with the track. And actually, interestingly, for Behrmann, it wasn't the first time he was driving here. Of course, he substituted for Carlos Sainz last year for Ferrari. So, yeah, that was you know, it was of course. I do like to see this track on the calendar, not necessarily for the country where it's in, but the track itself. I mean, it's quite, yeah, it's I don't know. It's a great watch. It's just so high speed, but it's definitely a dangerous one. You know, we've seen in recent times, we've seen the accident of Mick Schumacher, which was pretty heavy, and which was, I think that's something that is always, yeah, it can always happen, you know. We only saw one accident this weekend, which was the one of Tsunoda and Gasly, and I think that one was just, you know, very unfortunate at the start. And actually, interestingly, the only safety car and the only yellow flag that we really had today. And but it's always there. It's always a possibility, and I do get the same feeling with this track. So it's in that sense mixed feelings, because it's lovely to watch, but it's also a little bit nerve-wracking because there's a lot that can go wrong. The walls are very close, but looking at the answer, so you went pretty the answer somewhat in the middle, I would like to say. The right answer is 357 people went with Kimi Antonelli. And that means, Nacho, your 560 is 203 away from the right answer. And Sam, yours, 202, is 155 away from the right answer. So that means it's 3-3. And well, that brings us to the next finisher, which was Hamilton. I guess, you know, for Hamilton it was, I don't know, Sam, what do you think? What sort of weekend was it for Hamilton?
I think it was Hamilton doesn't typically do so well on this track.
That is true, actually.
He does struggle historically on this track, so I didn't really expect him to do fantastic, especially he's still acclimating himself to the car. We can see that. I think the qualifying wasn't his best result. I think also I saw a quote, and I could very well be paraphrasing here, but somebody said, you know, how could you improve your weekend or something to those extent? And he said, with a new brain or something to that length, was a little hilarious. But I mean, regardless, I think that the qualifying wasn't his best result. And as we know, like this, although overtaking is definitely possible on this track, I think also it's a risky track to do it regardless, and because of the high speed and the corners themselves. So where you're starting, it's going to be a challenge to really, really make a lot of headway up the grid. And I think that we saw that with Hamilton. He did have a few nice little on-track battles, but ultimately he wasn't someone that you, I'd say, similar to Russell, he had a little bit of a quiet drive, really, when it came to action and activity. So ultimately, points wise, where I think how many people picked him, I'm going to say fairly high. I'm going to go with 198. Actually, that's kind of low now that I say that, based on 50 over 1500 people playing. Let me change that.
All right.
I'm going to go with 298. Let me just increase that by 100.
We go 100 up. All right. And Nacho, what do you think?
Well, we know that Ferrari is not in his best, you know, situation right now. But it's like, I have the feeling, I was listening to Sam now, and I kind of agree of Hamilton, like a silent race again. But it makes me feel like, it gives me vibes of Red Bull, right? Of Verstappen and Checo, like Verstappen overperforming the car and Checo kind of underperforming or performing the car at it should be. So it's kind of the same, no? Like Ferrari is the fourth car, is behind Red Bull, is behind Mercedes and McLaren for sure. But you see Leclerc fighting for podium places and you see Hamilton fighting for the P7, which is where the Ferrari should belong. And it makes me feel like, is Hamilton already like, he get to the car, he get used to, did he get used to the car, or does he know how to perform that car, or is like he doesn't have that confidence yet? So I don't know, I strongly thought that Hamilton was gonna do better in these first races, because he's like, you know, a 7 world champion, he's one of the greatest in Formula One. But we are seeing him like struggling. We still don't see the Hamilton that I think people want to see yet. So P7, that would be maybe it's a result that people would expect from Hamilton according to the last races. I'm saying 460, guess Hamilton in P7.
All right, it's somewhat similar to what happened before in the previous one. The answer's in the middle, but this time you are 90. Sorry, you're 98 away from the right answer, Nacho. It was 362, which means that Sam's only 64 away from the right answer. It means that's another point for Sam. So you're actually taking the lead 4-3 now, and. Yeah,
tight other battle, than
that, I would like to close off with saying that it's, again, a pretty decent analysis from both of you. I feel the same. I think we said at the beginning of the season in this podcast as well, it's going to be a difficult season for Hamilton while he's still getting the grasp of handling that Ferrari. Leclerc already has a lot of experience in that car, and of course, you know, if you're struggling to keep up with your teammate in the first half of the season, that you know, motivational wise, it's also not easy. So it's going to be an interesting one to watch. And there we go to places 8 and 9, where we find both Williams cars. And I don't know about the two of you. I had Albon on P10. I don't know. Did you guys have Sainz and Albon in your predictions?
I did. I'm pretty sure I had Sainz in there for sure.
I had Sainz P9, Albon P10, and Tsunoda P8.
Right. I pretty similar. I went actually I went with Tsunoda, Gasly, Albon in 8, 9, and 10. You, Sam?
Oh, I'm gonna go off the top of my head. I know I had signs.
I can
in
check these
P8,
things, of course.
I believe. Yes. Why don't you do that? Because
I just
want to
see how your memory
check as well on the app.
Yeah, that's true.
But I
take a guess.
I'm pretty sure I had both Williams drivers in the 10. I know I had signs.
Yeah, you had signs and Albon on 9 and 10 actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it didn't help me too much in my points, but still had them in there. And I think what's really cool is the fact that all of us are picking them in the top 10 now, which is leading more to like the confidence that everybody is having in Williams at this point. I mean, a handful of years ago, you would not be putting them in your top 10 because you assume that they would be at the bottom of the grid. So really overall improvement for the team.
No, I remember, I think it was Australia 2022 or 2023 where Albon finished at P10 and with that last lap pit stop, and I think there was like only one person getting it right in forecast. And now we're going to get to Albon first. We're going to get to Albon after Sainz, so let's do Sainz first. I think it's Nacho who's going to make his prediction first. How many people had Sainz there on P8?
I'm saying 300. I think a lot of people guessed that Sainz was there in P8. P8. Sorry. He did a good job. He did a really great job on qualifying, outperforming that Williams with Albon behind, and then, you know, qualifying in front of Tsunoda, in front of Hamilton.
Exactly.
People that they should, you know, qualify in front of him. Again, he out-qualifies Hamilton, his replacement in Ferrari. And that shows that he's getting, like, he knows more the car. He's getting familiar with that. He's gaining confidence lap by lap. And Saudi Arabia is a circuit that, you know, doesn't forgive, as we said. And we know that the last time Carlos Sainz raced in Saudi Arabia was in 2023.
Right.
So it was like even more, you know, more hesitation maybe for him. And the way he performed at Williams throughout the weekend, that was really impressive. Really good points, really good race. Coming from Bahrain, that he deserved points, but with that incident with Tsunoda, he couldn't finish the race. So that's a nice comeback from the Spaniard.
So you're going with 300, Sam. Do you go over or under?
I think I'm going to go under. I'm going to say 212. And I am also going to say that, yeah, when it comes to signs, I think just we're seeing him get more comfortable with the car. And I'm actually really excited to see how he continues to grow with that car and see ultimately the result that Williams is going to have with him now being a part of the team. Like I said before, it's really fantastic to see overall that they are within the they are definitely a competitive midfield car at this point, or team, and they have two really fantastic drivers. And yeah, I think this is just the start of seeing signs with his results, and overall great weekend. I think a very great weekend for them. They can be quite satisfied with the result.
Well, it's definitely true, and definitely confidence is beginning to grow in Sainz. But there were not that many people, as what you were guessing just now. Actually, it was 80 people fewer than what you said, Sam. So it was 132 people that went with Sainz in that P8 spot. Meaning that means another point for you, Sam. It means it's actually 5-3. So not sure you're going to get to get the next two right in order to draw to go to the bonus round. But Sam, first you and your picks for Albon on P9.
Well, I think we've already highlighted Williams, so I'm just going to go with the number, and I am going to say, well, now based on the number that you gave, I'm going to go with 76.
Yeah, I think I'm saying more. Like, it's like a P9. I think those are the positions that usually, you know, people like Williams, Alpine, maybe Haas, they fight for that. I'm saying a little bit more. I'm saying 150. I think that's a decent amount. I think Albon was really, you know, very consistent in points. The previous races.
Okay, well, that makes it very nice. That makes it very interesting, because it means you do get the point. It was 175, so you're only 25 away. Means it's 5-4. Means you need to get the next one right in order to draw. And the next one is an interesting one, with Isaac Hadjar on P10. A very good race, and he went with the same strategy actually as Norris did, starting on the hards. And I would say altogether a pretty good result. And again, not only scoring points, but also outperforming his teammate. And I'm curious to hear from the both of you. Of course, it's actually I think Lawson did qualify ahead of him on the Saturday. So very very good comeback for Isaac on the Sunday.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very good. Very good drive for Isaac again on points. He's getting to know that Racing Bull. He's getting familiar. We still know that he's a rookie, but it was a tricky race. This was like a tricky track, and he didn't do any mistakes, and he just performed. And he took the strategy of the hard compound at the beginning, which we know at the beginning of the race is hard, you know, it's hard to have the hard on. And that was really, really interesting, really good comeback from him. He was in Q2 and then he finished in that top 10. One deserved point. For me, I would say less than Albon, less people than Albon for sure. So I'm saying 88.
Okay.
Maybe that's too high, but
no, I think that's a decent number. I'm gonna go a little higher. I'm gonna say 123, and again, another fantastic result from Isaac. I mean, I think we're just consistency on his end as a rookie driver has really been fantastic in the last several races. So I think the best is yet to come.
Well, I definitely hope so. But it's nice to see that the Racing Bulls can... I mean, this is not the first time he's finishing the points. And other than that first start in Australia, I think Isaac's been having a really good season thus far. Looking at your predictions, well, I'll go to Sam's straight away because... That was very close. It's only six away from the right answer. It was 129 people. So it means that you win it 6-4, Sam. So congratulations. Woo-hoo. On that. Very good result. I'm also quite happy that it didn't end in a draw because actually I did not prepare. Well, I did prepare a bonus question, but that was going to be how many went with Norris on P1. So I don't need to go into the bonus round. So thank you, Sam. But you will not be listening to your national anthem. That will be the Serbian one.
That makes complete sense, and I am looking forward to that. And a 95 points. I mean, that's a great result. Definitely deserves the anthem.
Yeah, I do agree. I actually not before we also have a little bit of a look at the next race. So of course we're up for Miami, and that's going to be in 2 weeks. It's going to be, if I'm not mistaken, on the exact date. That's the 4th of May that we have that race. And it's going to be a sprint weekend. So we're going to go back to the sprint format, second sprint format this year. What are you guys looking forward to? Can I get a little sneak preview on your podium prediction, or is that just too early?
Too early.
I mean, we can guess what is going to happen, right? We saw McLaren winning on Miami last year.
Yeah, right. That was Norris's first win in his career.
They're not gonna. Yeah, I don't think that nothing's gonna change, right, from one week to another. I think McLaren will dominate. We'll see if Red Bull is close. I don't think Red Bull will be close. In Miami, maybe Ferrari steps up, and you know, but it will be interesting with the sprint. It will be exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the sprint. I am definitely always interesting. And when it comes to playing the game, hopefully a way for me to redeem myself in some capacity, because there will be extra points on the table. Miami is... I definitely not shied away from vocalizing the fact that it is my least favorite track on the calendar. Nonetheless, I will be excited to have another race weekend, and like I said, another sprint weekend. I agree with you, Nacho. I think that the track is built for McLaren's usually, they should do well here. But you know what? I expect the unexpected. I mean, it could be anybody's game. And regardless, I think that Max is going to be coming into this weekend, especially after the result and visibly being as frustrated as he was. I think he is going to come in definitely looking to try to come back with a vengeance. So I think either way, we have a few weeks, but looking ahead to it, it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I agree. It's also not my favorite track on the calendar. But then again, you know, low expectations sometimes result only in, something really, really good. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, it's the kind of tracks that we really look forward to, such as Japan, which we all love the layout of that track. But then we actually, we saw a race that wasn't, you know, didn't have many highlights. So, you know, it's interesting. It's also not always... based exactly on track layout. And there can be more, you know, circumstances that come into play. We leave the desert, so, you know, we all also, the chances of getting some rain during a weekend are increased, which is great if you ask me. So a lot of things to look forward to, and of course, yeah, blind predictions for the sprint weekend is also, you know, it's an interesting twist to the format, of course. Yeah. Like you said, Sam, more points on the board, but it's also more tough to really predict. But I do agree with what Nacho was saying there. Of course, you know, I think it's we're prone to get a lot of McLaren 1-2 predictions. But you have 2 weeks to think about which of the two to put on top, and then again, you know, I think we've also seen that it's, even though that's the thing that we all expect, it's not necessarily what's going to be the outcome. So, you know, it might pay off to actually go with an alternative winner in your prediction. So I'm very much looking forward to get them all in, and we see each other after the race in Miami, and hopefully a lot to talk about then.
I'm sure there will be.